Hey, 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 everybody. This is Danny, and welcome to TFG Radio with a special edition. I am joined by a very special guest who is here to tell you about why painting matters and why you should probably listen to him more than me about anything. James from Siege Studios over in the UK. So, James, come on, say hi.
Hey, guys. Thank you very much for having me on the show. I really appreciate it a lot.
No, if you have not seen any of Siege Studios' work on, you know, they're all over the social media, it's some really striking stuff on there. I mean, it is really, really impressive, from the big centerpieces to even the kind of smaller infantry size models. I mean, there's some gorgeous artwork on those things.
Thank you. Yeah, I mean, it's been taking a long time. We're obviously 7 years old as a business, so it's you know, we've worked extremely hard over the last 7 years to get to where we are. But we really enjoy producing the content that we produce, and obviously hope that people like what they see, and you know, and that we, you know, fit a specific market in the industry as well. So yeah.
Well, that brings us kind of our first topic. We were discussing this a little bit off the air, but you know, TFG Radio, we just celebrated 5 years in the business, which doesn't seem that long until you realize that 90% of podcasts have started within the last year and a half. And then to think about you guys being 7 years in the commission painting business, that's almost unheard of, right? Especially over here.
Yeah, I mean, we're not the oldest, but we've grown very, very, very quickly over the last 7 years. Like, you know, there's been a lot of sacrifices, let's put it that way. So, it's been a long journey so far. So it's been very good. So very happy with how it's going.
So tell me, how did you get started, right? Like, what really kind of got you going into this of like, you know what, I want to paint miniatures, and not just paint them, but paint them to the best possible quality you can imagine, and, you know, do that for a living?
So, I mean, I've always been into models. Like, my granddad's got me into model airplane kits. Like, they're called Airfix over here in the UK and in Europe. But I got into model airplane kits when I was a kid. He was in the army during the Second World War, and like, he knew every single airplane you could possibly imagine.
Right.
And obviously got, you know, as a kid, got me into Airfix kits, and I built them wrong, like sticking the wings on the wrong parts and all that.
Yeah.
You know, deal with that. And then when I was nine, like I was being looked after by my nan, and I got taken into a charity shop. And then I've discovered a bag of a very badly painted Space Marines, and the rest, shall we say, is history. So that's kind of how it happened. I had the break, like everybody has a break,
yes,
at some point, you know, which I had as well. You know, I had that break, and then came back to it and just really sort of jumped headfirst into it, basically. I'd always painted miniatures in and around sort of doing other things. I got asked when I was in college and sixth form, you know, I got asked all the time to sort of paint models for friends and stuff. Right. And I wasn't doing it for a lot of money back then at all whatsoever. It was just for the odd bit of money here and there. You know, got into full-time employment. I was a recruitment consultant for 11 years. What happened is I basically started the hobby again and, came back home to my sort of parents' house, found all my old models in the loft, and then realized how much ability I'd lost at painting, and then sort of just started up again. So I started a YouTube channel just to sort of get back in the swing of things, and I got quite a good following on my YouTube channel quite quickly, which was really nice. And then I basically got approached by a couple of guys who were doing a form of commission painting, or a commission painting business, but it wasn't very professional, just being honest. And coming from 11 years in recruitment, you're kind of ingrained in with doing everything as professional as possible.
Sure, sure.
So I decided to step away and do things myself, and run them as best I physically could and as professionally as possible. And that's kind of where Siege started. So what then happened was, I'd done 2 years of basically two jobs. I worked a 60-hour week doing recruitment, and I'd come, before I went to work and after work, I'd come home and do 3 hours each side of work of emails and stuff like that for 2 years.
Oh, wow. It
got to the point where Matt and Dave, Mini Wargaming, basically, I got in conversation with them and they asked me to do, or us, well, me at that point, to paint a load of models for their Mini Wargaming Space Marine chapter, and which we did, and we done a load of models for them. And then I thought nothing much of it. You know, they said they were going to do a video or something on their channel. I didn't really think much of it, to be fair. And then what happened was they actually done the video, and I woke up one Saturday morning with nearly 1,500 emails.
Oh, my God.
So at that point, I was like, right, well, I physically can't paint word models on my own. My major, I mean, I'm very extremely passionate about all aspects of the industry and the hobby. But competition painting and high level painting is something that really, really is like my favorite thing. And so I got a couple of my friends that were in that circle to kind of help out and just come on board. And that's kind of how Siege, I mean, I was painting under the name Siege for 2 years on my own anyway, out of a small, tiny little apartment or flat. And then that happened with all the emails, 1,500 emails that we got in like one sort of day. And then, you know, we done some more work for Mini Wargaming after that, and then got, you know, another video, another couple of videos, and then got a load of emails again, you know, so it kind of spiraled out, not out of control, but got busier and busier and busier. And then, you know, 7 years down the line, we got an office with 4 members of staff, 30 painters, so it's been a very, very humbling journey, but at the same time, it's been a very, very hard journey. It's not been an easy ride in the slightest, but no, super, super happy. You know, I wouldn't change all the hard work for anything. And Siege is obviously now where it's at. We are a premium painting studio. We paint to very, very, very high levels. Our most basic level is a premium gaming level, which is much higher than the industry standard.
Right.
We're first ranked on Google, have been so for the last 6 years. We're the only company in the industry to have Trustpilot, which I think a lot of stateside listeners probably won't be familiar with it, but Trustpilot is an internationally recognised third-party review website. Mm-hmm. We're the only company in the industry to have one, as in the only commissioned painting service to have one, and also we have a 96% rating on there as well. It's been a lot of hard work, but hopefully that's all paying off.
I think it clearly is. I mean, to go from just kind of you doing it as a something you enjoy doing as, you know, a side hustle between jobs to actually having a staff of 30 people. And then,
yeah,
I mean, that's really impressive. So I guess my kind of follow up to that would be, how, you know, you have your kind of stable of painters who work for you. How much painting do you do now as part of the company? And, you know, I take it as the boss, you get a lot of freedom of what projects you get to choose. So what really draws you in where you're like, oh, no, I want to do this one?
Well, I don't actually get to do any of the painting anymore. I took a step off of the tools about 2 years ago, I think, roughly 2 years. But, you know, the type of business owner that I am, you know, there's business owners vary from company to company, but the culture at Siege is very, very different. Like, you know, I being in recruitment, I used to see so many companies that had a them and us kind of culture,
right,
where the management or owner of the business would be very, very removed from the business, if that makes sense. And
yeah,
whereas I'm not like that in the slightest. Like, you know, all the guys know that if the boss hat has to be put on, it is put on firmly. But at the same time, I am more of a right-hand man than I am a boss, and I don't act like a boss, if that makes sense.
Sure.
Purely because I think when companies get a them and us culture within them, I think that's a breeding ground for resentment. And when you can speak from a position of, well, that someone working for a business knows that owner would do the job the same as them. They would, you know, I'll pick a broom up and sweep the floor, or I'll hoover the floor, or I'll vacuum the floor. Do you know what I mean? I'm not the sort of owner that sees any task or anything beneath me. I'm not like that in the slightest. And I think there's a lot of companies that don't have that culture. And at the end of the day, you know, at that point where obviously Siege had to grow early on in the early days, there was a point where I physically couldn't paint all the models for myself. And the moment that that happens, and the moment that you do take on people that work for your business grows as a result of those employees and those people that do work for you. So without your staff, you don't have a business. You know, and I think there's a lot of companies that don't really value that, you know, that it would still be a small company or a smaller company without them. So, so that's kind of the culture. But going back on point, I do paint still. I do, you know, do a lot, quite a decent amount of painting, you know, but, it's purely for competitions. I don't really game and do armies and stuff too much anymore. I was a very competitive player. Mm-hmm. But I don't really do that anymore purely just because quite honestly, I've got two businesses. I don't really have a lot of time. So the time right. that I do get is more spent on and better spent on painting things for a level which I can then use for competitions or for just have something, you know, a worthy investment of time on my shelf, if that makes sense.
No, absolutely. So what, you know, GW produces insane models, but they're not the only one in town. But when you see something come out, what about the model attracts you to it where you're like, oh, I really need to paint that, or I have such a great idea for this?
It'll either be the sculpt, or it could be, for example, details that the model has, or it could be, you know, a good idea for a colorway or anything like that, like something that it, you know, I think as a painter you have to be drawn to the model that you're painting. I'm not one for just painting something because it's the newest model or it's the coolest sculpt that's just come out or like that. I'm very much, you know, you have to be, you know, at the end of the day, miniature painting is an art form. It is art, you know, so you have to have some kind of connection to it. That's what I look for. I look for something that draws me to the model and that interests me because it's a model that I enjoy for any of those reasons I mentioned, basically.
Yeah. So what's the last model that, you know, you're like, oh man, I gotta paint that.
Probably Mephiston, I think. Mephiston model. Yeah, it's probably one of my favourites of the new sort of Primaris range that's just come out. I'm not just personal, isn't, you know, I'm not the biggest fan of the Primaris range personally, but right. But you know, I'm glad that when the model was designed, a lot of the original details and character of the model was kept. I think it's a very, very worthy rendition of him. I think, you know, the I think the big fear for any of the, you know, the Marine chapters, when characters do get across the Rubicon is that they lose something of how they were before, if that makes sense, because they change. But that, you know, also there's been loads of really nice busts that have come out recently from Big Child, mm-hmm. that really interests me a lot. I'm not just selective of one manufacturer. Admittedly, you know, GW is probably the main interest when it comes to my models, but again, I do things like busts as well, so right. it varies really. But then again, at the same time, I absolutely love a lot of the older models. Siege is running a painting competition in the UK in a couple of weeks, staff category, all the staff have obviously been, you know, not been forced to enter, but they've said, look, if you want to enter, obviously you can win obviously a trophy. But we're all keeping it secret, like the entries that we're doing. And I'm actually working on a really, really old model for it, just because, and I can't really say unless any of them are listening, but it is nice to vary up between old and new. I think sometimes older models involve a lot more work because they, you know, the cast isn't as good or whatever the case might be. But yeah, sometimes it's nice to just vary up what you're working on, I think, sometimes.
I don't disagree. I mean, I with older models, especially ones that were, you could tell they were, you know, the two-up was hand-sculpted out of clay or green stuff. There's a certain artistry to it, right? Because someone's making it with their hand, they're not drawing it on a computer, and it might not be the crispest detail, but you can still feel it on the model.
Oh yeah, 100%, dude. Absolutely 100%. Yeah, I think it's nice. Thing is, you know, what you got to realize is GW are 20 years ahead of all the competitors in the sense of the quality of the models that they produce. You know, and it's quite funny. The other day, you know, we were looking at one manufacturer and looking at GW, and they're both new models, but the difference in quality is just, well, it's remarkable, if I'm honest with you. Like, you know, it's really, really interesting. But no, like I said, they're, you know, GW are a phenomenal company. I'm the biggest Games Workshop fanboy you'll meet.
Clearly we are here too, as much as John likes to complain about them. You know, we've been playing this game for so long for a reason. And yeah, the models are often fantastic. And, you know, with the painting, you said that you're more of a competition painter. So what goes into your mind when you're thinking about not not painting just necessarily for personal enjoyment, artistic enjoyment, but also with the mindset of I will be competing against other people in a specific category. How does your mindset shift, or what is your mindset kind of like?
Yeah, so it's interesting you touch upon mindset, because a lot of people don't think about it, and it is a very important aspect of anything, really. My dad brought me up very, very hard in the sense of, I had to work for everything I've ever had. And, I was always taught that failures and mistakes are not things to dwell upon, but they are a learning curve, if that makes sense.
Right. Yeah.
So whenever I, if I didn't achieve something, or if I'd done something wrong or anything like that, my mindset wouldn't be, oh, I did it wrong, or, oh, damn, I didn't do it right. It would be, right, I've learned from that lesson. I'm going to do it better and better next time, so that I don't make the mistake again. And I think that's, mindset is super important. But generally speaking, like for competitions, like preparation is really important. There's various things that are really integral to actually, when you're doing competition pieces. So like, for example, the preparation of it, obviously, and everything that you do to prepare the piece, both in the cleaning of the model and the composition. On top of that as well, like, especially if you're doing something for example, like a Games Workshop competition, like, narrative is super important as well. It's, right. the narrative in the game is such a vast aspect to it. And a lot of people tend to overlook it a little bit, because the thing is, it's there are other game systems out there that don't have such a deep narrative, where you do have a bit more free reign to do things. Like, just as a generic example, like, you wouldn't paint Ultramarines yellow or pink, do you know what I mean? They have to be blue. So, and there's obviously, that's a very, very shallow sort of approach when it comes to the depth of that game system. But really, really taking into consideration the narrative and background of what you're painting as well is super important. Being very methodical in your approach as to all the stages, thinking about what you're going to do, how you're going to do, preparing colours, spending a decent time selecting the colours that you possibly are going to use, because then that way, you want to work the best recipes and things like that for when you're putting the paint on the model.
Right.
There's all these things. It's not just simply about picking up the brush and just painting the model without any kind of forethought, if that makes sense. So I go through a very sort of, I try and be as meticulous as I can and go through as much really, really strict preparation as possible, just because in that way it reduces risk of making mistakes or using things that I don't want to use, or getting to a point where I'm like, oh, what colour should I use here? It's kind of all pre-planned and pre-prepared, really sort of, I don't want to say tactical, but it's almost like when you're writing an army list, you're trying to work out the best combinations and the best things. It's that preparation is super important, so that when you do approach it, you approach it from a position of confidence rather than not knowing what you're doing, if that makes sense.
Right, sure. So with that, interesting you say that. No, it's interesting you say about, preparation, especially things like color scheme, right? Like, looking at your color theory, what colors are going to bring each other out, right? What clashes do you want to create versus avoid? How much then, with all that preparation, pre-painting goes in, how often do you feel just kind of moved of like, oh, I just had this idea, let me try doing this. Oh shit, it worked, that looks really good. Or do you kind of try and stick to the plan you've created and like see it through?
Oh, brilliant. No, so what I was going to say was it's really important, that you do experiment with color, because I think it number one, you learn a lot more when you're in a position of uncertainty, because you do make mistakes or you do discover things, and they do benefit you as a painter when you do improve. So I think it is very important to experiment. I probably wouldn't experiment while I'm doing something for competition, because I'd want to, work from the best possibility of strength, if that makes sense.
Right. Yeah.
So that's probably not, something that I probably wouldn't do. But experimenting is definitely something that I would advise that people do try with when it comes to their painting. It's super, super important.
I think makes sense, especially if you're going into a competition. You don't necessarily, if it's a competition piece, want to suddenly try something you never tried before, right? And then just ruin hours upon hours of work, right? Because it's not something you had practiced, planned for, et cetera.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, exactly. Absolutely. 100%. Yeah. You just, it just doesn't make sense to do that, because you end up in a position where you, 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 you don't feel confident in what you're doing, and being confident in what you're doing, it always gives you the best results, because you know, you go to a position of strength when it comes to using techniques or things like that, for example. So yeah.
No, I mean, I think that's really key, since I know I will often get a model or two that I just want to kind of play around with, and I'll experiment with it, but it's never with the mindset of, oh, this is going to be something I'm going to put up for, you know, Best in Painted anywhere or anything. It's just, you know, if I want to do Best in Painted, I really go with the skill sets I know I'm good at, right? Like,
yeah, 100%. Especially
organic shapes, things like that. Like a Lizardmen army, a Tyranid army, I can paint that to a high quality very well because I'm confident in that. You know, a Space Marine, that's something where I'm really going to be like, flat open surfaces, not my friends.
No, that's fair. That's 100% fair. Do you know what I mean? Like, you know, but the thing is that what I would always say is it's always good to put yourself outside your comfort zone and any complacency that you have when it comes to painting, because that's when you learn the most and grow the most.
Right.
It's really, really helpful if you know, if you've never painted a Marine, or if you've never painted a Tyranid, or if you've never painted X model, then it's a very good thing to do is to put yourself in that position and practice that, because it will, you'll only benefit by gaining skill and gaining understanding of painting something different, if that makes sense.
Sure. So with the painting business and, you know, the kind of moving between the idea of competition, since you've been doing this for, again, longer than I think, you know, than most people have, what has been kind of the biggest changes you've seen in the 7 years since you started Siege Studios, right? Like, what's the kind of current been, the trends that you've seen come and go, and the overall shape of the river, so to speak?
Of the industry or of commission painting?
Commission industry, you know, the commission painting industry specifically.
Well, the industry, it's a very funny one. I have this conversation with lots of people, and first of all, the wargaming industry in general is it's becoming more and more commercialized, which is a very, very good thing. I think, you know, many moons ago, it started in, you know, it's John and Fred in their shed kind of, you know, or in their garage, right, kind of, you know, and that's where the industry has come from. And there's nothing wrong with that at all whatsoever. But obviously, like any industry, you know, time passes and things get more commercialized. So the commission painting industry in general, first thing I'd say to anyone is that the industry is very much like the Wild West. There's no regulation, there's no governing body, there's no accredited, there's no set quality level within it, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Number one, obviously, because it's art, and it is art, obviously, because it's miniature painting, it's painting. But number two, just because the industry is a little bit further behind commercially than pretty a lot of other industries, you know. When you think of it, the disparity between companies, so for example, let's take Games Workshop, who are on the FTSE 100 or FTSE 250, and then the next biggest company in the industry, the difference in size between those two companies is vast.
Right.
Whereas in other industries, you have several blue chip companies or larger companies that are all there or thereabouts. Does that make sense? So the industry leaders are way ahead and the other companies are quite substantially behind. So when you have that mindset and understanding of the industry, first of all, in general, and then we approach commission painting, there's only really, you know, a very, very few companies that are running as proper businesses, if that makes sense.
Sure.
And I don't mean that making sort of people who work from their bedroom or work from home or just doing it as a side school thing. That's not demeaning of any of that. But there's very few that are doing it at the commercial level, if that makes sense. And I think the reason for that is because the industry is seen as a hobby.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Okay. That's why you won't see that word used on any sort of Siege literature or social media or anything like that, because we are a complete business. We are a fully registered UK business with an office, with a solicitor, with staff, with accountant, with everything. And it's very, very different to the large percentage of commission painters in the industry, if that makes sense. That's the first thing.
Mm-hmm.
The next thing I'd say is that the trends and things like that, like typically the trends will obviously follow the meta. And what I mean by that is obviously the books and things that Games Workshop release.
Right.
We're very fortunate to obviously work with Tabletop Tactics, Striking Scorpion, Lutein, Mini Wargaming and various other companies. And we obviously get lots of, you know, customers and clients will obviously ask, I've seen this list format. Or I want to add these models to my list now because they're now competitive. So
right.
the industry really follows the gaming aspect of it, and that's for a large percentage of it. And then on top of that as well, you have private, you know, you have individuals who just want collections of models that will add a certain model because they like the look of it, for example.
Right.
So it varies, but I would say probably the largest percentage is that of people who would like to add things to their armies because of competitive play or because of playing with their friends and wanting the next strongest thing to use with their army, if that makes sense. So
a lot of Iron Hands lately.
Oh yeah. Yeah. a lot of Iron Hands. Yeah. I can tell you that. And a lot of Thunderfire cannons, which has not been something that I'd expect for a very long time. So there've been a lot of people asking for Thunderfire cannons recently. But no, it's very interesting. Like I said, the industry is very, very, war gaming is very different, so it's probably about 5 to 7 years behind most other industries for commercial nature. It's very, very different because, again, as I said, there is no regulation. And I think that's partly why Siege has got a Trustpilot, because it's kind of like a third party accredited site. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Being frank, anyone can write a review on their website and it could be realistic or it could be doctored. Whereas a third party website that isn't controlled by the company, it gives that kind of certification, if that makes sense. So I don't know. That's the way that I look at it anyway.
No, I mean, that seems to track. I mean, I've known in various ways lots of people who have tried to do commission painting, in any way tried to kind of monetize their, hobby in some way as a kind of a full-time profession. And it usually is very, it's a small business, but people treat it as a hobby or in some ways without a certain degree of professionalism. And
yeah,
those are the ones you tend to see really struggle, after the first year where the first year you always feel like it's exciting, I'm doing it. And then by the second year, you're like, oh wow, I have bills due and, this isn't doing exactly what I want, and gets real scary. So, do you think your level of professionalism, again, that experience of working in the kind of professional field for so long before going to Siege, has really helped you bring that certain level of that certain caliber of experience and expectation? Do you think that really helped you kind of have the longevity and growth you've seen?
I think it's part of it as well. I don't know if I'd say it's all of it, but I'd say that it's a good percentage of it. The 11 years that I did in recruitment was very, very, recruitment's a, I don't know if you know it very well, but it's a very, very dog-eat-dog industry. You may work within one company, but every single other recruitment consultant in the building is essentially an enemy. So it does whittle out. I don't want to say this in the wrong context, but it does whittle out the weak and the strong have to survive. So it's a very interesting industry, and there's a lot of transferable skills that I've taken from when I worked in it and used obviously in the growth and in the building of Siege. But it's kind of a bit of a hybrid between, I had a break from miniatures and from all that, I was involved in music and bands and things. And when I was in the band, I had my own clothing company while I was on the road, just so I had some kind of income. But I've kind of taken a lot of the things that I learned from that industry, a lot of things that I learned from when I was in recruitment, and I've kind of made a bit of a mishmash of all of it and built the business model and built Siege off from that foundation.
Right.
On top of it, I think as well, it's also the way it's dealing with people. I think, again, it does tie back to recruitment, but the way you deal with people is very, very important in any industry, and client interaction is super important. I think communication and also, just a professional level, dealing with people in a professional manner so that they know from the get-go and from day one that they are dealing with a business and it's not just, something done for extra money, if that makes sense. Everything is handled in an extremely professional manner, both in the way that we execute projects and the way that that's approached, and also in the documenting, the processes, the procedures and all of that. We have weekly meetings to make sure that the procedure is as best as possible for the team, for the office, for the client, for everything. We're always looking to add value for customers and add value for the staff in the best possible way. you know, I think it's that never being complacent mentality that helps and has been a real reason why Siege has grown the way it has, because I've never become complacent with it, I don't think. So yeah, I don't know.
No, it seems like that would help. I mean, I think a common issue that I hear often is, you know, someone who's, you know, running a small paint studio, they get sick, they get hurt, and they have commissions and they get backlogged, and all of a sudden you have people kind of crying on the internet about, oh, well, he stole my army, or he, you know, blah, blah, blah. And there's, you know, when you're small, just kind of just you and maybe you and someone else, if you don't have a contingency plans, like redundancies built in from that kind of long-term planning, you can really get derailed by these things that happen.
Oh, 100 million percent, yeah. And that's the thing. I mean, the thing is, like anything, it is, you know, it's managing expectations of clients, you know, and you just have to be realistic, you know. I mean, we are a very busy studio, and we do have, you know, because of the way that we do business and because of the way that we approach executing the commissions, we have a waiting list for whatever it's a character, a small force, or a vast army. We have waiting lists at different lengths as a result of that.
Right.
And I think that as long as you're clear about that, because of the quality that you're going to be receiving, that there is a waiting list and that there is a demand, I think as long as you're open and also at the same time give updates and things like that, I think that's one of the key things that keeps people on side, that makes them understand that they are getting a quality product and that the wait is worth it, if that makes sense, as long as you're clear about that. Whereas if you go radio silent, then yeah, of course there's going to be a lot of problems that, of course, as a result of that. But yeah, it's just being transparent. You know, the thing is, you're only as good as your last job, and you know, you could do 5,000 perfect projects, but it's, especially in our industry as well, it's the one project that you do wrong that potentially can ruin you.
Right.
You know, and on top of that, within that, it's the way that you deal with it. You know, if you deal with a problem in a bad way, then that's going to come and bite you in the backside. But if you deal with it in a positive manner to try and make the client as happy as possible, and also, you know, defend the hard work that you put in building a brand and building a business, I think that's half of it as well, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So, yeah.
No, I mean, it's, again, the way you talk about it, it's clear you have it's not just I'm a very good painter, I do this, but you have a sense of how business actually operates, right? Like how you logistically make something happen in this world in that sense. And I think that's always refreshing since, and for me, it provides a certain level of trust because, you know, as much as I love plenty of people in this business, there's some who, you know, the way they present and the way they even talk about what goes wrong or how they deal with conflict of, hey, you didn't do this the way I kind of needed you to, doesn't communicate a sense of like, it will get done. There's a thought process reasons for this. So I think that's great. I mean, I think it's bringing in that kind of expertise in business, I think, is essential for success.
I think, yeah, 100%. I mean, the thing is, it's like, you know, and it goes back to that kind of, you know, I always say, you know, John and Fred in their shed or garage, you know what I mean? The thing is, it's like, unfortunately, because the industry, its roots do come from a hobby and from a pastime, mm-hmm. you know, the mindset of approaching things from a business perspective perhaps isn't always instilled from day one. It's, oh, I've got a great idea for this. I want to do this. And it comes from a hobby kind of background or hobby kind of a mindset or approach.
Right.
Whereas I think when I started Siege all those years ago, I wasn't thinking about next week or next month or next year. I being honest, I was thinking about, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5 years down, because I wanted to run it as a business. I didn't want to run it as, you know, believe me, like, you know, working 60-hour week and, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
I think your microphone's muted. I don't know if you can hear me or not.
Yeah, I can hear you.
Oh, sorry. I was to say, like working a 60-hour week, like, and dealing with people day in, day out when I was in recruitment, and, you know, having people let you down for interviews and having all those kind of things, you know, I was at that point where I was like, I definitely do 100% want to get out of recruitment, because I've been doing it for a very long time. And if I can do what I love in a business form and leave recruitment, then that was my goal. So it wasn't just like, oh, I want to paint some extra models and do that. My mindset was, I definitely 100% want to get out of recruitment and run a business and build a business. So yeah, I think you do have to write, if you, when you're trying to do something in any industry, and you have to approach it especially when it's a hobby or pastime industry, you have to approach it with a complete business mind. You really do. You know, otherwise you're kind of running a race with your feet tied, if that makes sense.
No, absolutely. And, you know, speaking of, because you said that the hobby business, because it does come from, as you said, you know, two guys in their backyard, right? Like trying to make something happen. And now we have, you know, GW is this massive multinational corporation, although they don't always act like it. You know, they don't always plan like it, I think, probably more importantly. you know, when you see like, oh wow, everything is out of stock right now, that is good. Shocking.
Yeah. I think that's a testament to how quickly the industry is growing as well. Like, I think, you know, one of my good friends and I were talking about this the other day, and I think the reason why things like that do happen is because, I think people want more value in things in what they actually do. Like everyone works, you know, I'm massive. You can talk to me about my mindset when it comes to time quite in depth, but like, long story short, like it is the most important commodity, time. I think a lot of people don't, because it isn't a physical, tangible thing that you can manipulate and hold in your hand or see. I think a lot of people do devalue it or don't appreciate it, and that's nothing. It's kind of willful ignorance to how important it is, and that's not saying people are ignorant. It's just saying that they don't really focus on it because it's this thing that it just happens. You know what I mean? And I think one of the reasons why that's when it comes to sort of specifically the industry and why it's growing so quickly and so rapidly and becoming more commercialized very quickly. I think the reason for that is because when you, like, you know, I don't play computer games anymore. I haven't done so for a very long time, but what I know now is that there's a lot of like in-game purchases and all these kind of things. And the thing is like with this industry, when you buy the models, you don't need to pay to upgrade them, or, you know, you might need to buy the odd new codex and things like that and books like that, which kind of is the same, but you still get a physical book that's tangible that you can keep, you know, it's not like, you know, so I think that's why a lot of people are moving across to perhaps being more invested into board games, war games, D&D, all these kind of things, because it is more of a, for what you invest into it, you get more of a reward and more of a more longevity from it, I think, you know, which I think is a reason why. But that is half the factor as to why when something new drops, and because you've got the growth of the industry and the growth of the player bases and all these different things, plus, you know, we can get on to sort of talking about how can, you know, tournaments and things like that, you're going to have, you know, proper esports eventually within Warzone. I really do see it going that way. But, you know, it's you know,
that's how, you know, a lot of the big names are pushing it too. So
yeah,
you know, that's not a surprise.
You know, I really, you know, within the next 2-3 years, you know, I'm not saying that, you know, wargaming tournaments will become like the UFC or things like that, but you will have, like, you know, the likes of like Lawrence or like loads of other people that have got very, very good, you know, competitive gaming minds on them that are in the top 10, 50, 100, whatever in the ITC or in all this. You will have, I can, I'm going to put this on the line now. I'm going to say it, but I really do see within the next maybe 2 to 5, maybe a bit longer years, you'll have games of the best being broadcast on some paid service, you know. I do see that potentially happening because it is going that way, you know. And I think if you factor in that 40K, obviously being one of the dominant games in the industry, is getting more and more streamlined so that it does make the visual aspect of it less boring and games quicker. I think when you combine that with the way that the competitive playing is going, I think it's very easy to see and very apparent that within a short period of time, it will be like that, you know. But going back to it, like, you know, again, as I said, the reason that things like, for example, demand to production, you know, it can be off, I think, is because it's growing so quick and more people are invested into it that when something new drops, and especially when you combine it to things like, for example, the sisters that were out of stock or haven't been updated in 20 years.
Right.
When you get those kind of combinations all together, it can only result in mass demand and minimal production. Do you know what I mean? So, you know,
absolutely.
It's very, very interesting. But yeah, no, I agree with you completely. So,
yeah, it's something interesting. So, you know, John, Adam, and I have been judging the LVO pretty much since Reese stepped back from being able to do it himself because the convention just got too big.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're always really interested in competitive play and like the future of it, the esports of it. And one thing I always thought, I'd like love to get your thoughts on it, is something that I think is really important for making 40K or any tabletop game more immediately appealing to someone who just happened to stumble upon it because it's on Twitch or wherever is the painting quality of the armies, right, of the models.
100%.
Since, you know, like some players have beautiful armies. Some competitive players have gorgeous armies, whether they painted them themselves or used, you know, like you guys to paint it. And then some have really bad ones. But I'm like looking through some of your work, and like you guys have the Zichian bird, not Keeper of Secrets, the Lord of Change.
Yeah.
Just strikingly gorgeous. I mean, with a little like globe written on, like, you know, hand painted onto his staff, right?
Yeah.
Like, it is just, I mean, I just know me. If I'm sitting there surfing Twitch and I see that model, I'm going to just stop and watch whatever it is. You've got at least 3 minutes of my life, right?
Yeah, 100%.
So, I wanted to hear your thoughts on this idea of having a kind of higher standard for the hobby aspect on the streaming, even in the competitive side.
Yeah, no, 100%. I think, you know, nobody wants to see just grey plastic. I think the models, and also it's a bit of a disjustice to the models themselves, especially with the quality, you know, of the models and the way things are going. But no, 100%. Like, I think that miniatures being painted and the standard that is being now requested by tournaments across, you know, internationally is really important, because I think, and also I think it's important for gamers as well, because, you know, what it is it's investment of pride into their models as well. You know, you know, if the same investment that you do in creating the best list and, you know, making all the, you know, the synergies between units and all those kind of things, I think, you know, it's just as important as doing all of that and presenting your army in a presentable manner that reflects upon you as a player, and also as well reflects upon the passion that you have for the hobby. So I think it's massively, massively important. And I am glad to see that now, that things are, you know, the expectations from tournaments is increasing massively, that things are done in a better manner. I think it's only good for the industry and for the community in general that armies are expected to be at a certain standard to even be able to enter a Gaia tournament. Do you know what I mean? I think it's a very good thing.
Yeah, no, we've been big proponents of, you know, at first it was the 3-color minimum, but now we're really, you know, really it's the GW standard, right? It's, you know, an appropriate base coating of all the colors, right? Not just here's red and one shoulder pad blue, but the model actually blocked out, and it's the colors that you could actually build off of if you really wanted to fully paint it, right? Like to a high standard.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Awesome. No, all I was going to say was I think it's a fine balance, especially with the way the meta changes as well, because the thing is, it's like, you know, obviously painters vary in speed and vary in sort of like how quick they can do things and all of that. I think the thing is obviously at the moment, you know, an FAQ drops or, you know, a new, like for example, the you know, the recent one, obviously I think the one that you guys had quite, you know, there's a lot of people running it, was like Chaplain Dreadnoughts with quad las cannons. It was like,
God.
You know, like the thing, things like that. It's like, you know, the meta changes at such a rapid pace now that, it's a very fine balance of painting the models to a standard that obviously meets the criteria of the tournament and also that you're proud to present, but at the same time gives you the ability to actually paint the models to that standard in time for the tournament,
right.
With the way that the game changes. Does that make sense? It's like, it's a very interesting one, but yeah, no, 100%. And you know, one of my good mates who was judging the painting competition at the LVO, he said that he obviously looked, walking around the tables, and what he saw, he said the quality, you know, from what he's seen at other tournaments was very high, which is really good. So yeah.
Yeah, I'm one of the paint judges at LVO for the you know, final scoring. And you know, mostly fell into that because I've been doing it the longest. My kind of two main judges with me, Chris Morgan and Thomas Hexham Oakley, are, I think anyone would agree, are superior hobbyists to me. I've just been doing it the longest and have a good general understanding of how painting works. But we were really impressed, and every year, I mean, you know, part of it too is we were talking of one army that we knew of that we had seen multiple times that's very well painted. No one would say it's not, but we've seen it for 3 years in a row, and it usually makes our final cut. It doesn't usually place, but it makes, kind of gets into the conversation. And this year it didn't, because this just, the quality was so much higher from so many other people, and that army just hadn't been developed. You know, like there was nothing there. It was good, it was strong, but it was not, you know, Well, there's no further investment into it, and there's so many new armies that we saw we never seen before that were just mind-blowing, right?
Yeah.
They're just great work.
No, and I completely agree with you. Like, it's the same, you know, I haven't been to like tournaments at head office here in the UK. I haven't been to one in quite some time, but from what I know, from the people that I know that work there, that, you know, they've all said that the increase in quality of stuff that's been going to their events as well is, you know, has increased massively over the last sort of year to 18 months as well, which is really good. It's just good to get more people painting and get them producing stuff that, you know, the ideal event is, and it's good for your events as well, that, you know, if you, for promotion materials and photography and stuff like that, that everything that is there is painted to a very, very good standard. You know what I mean? It's really important. So yeah, I'm a huge advocate for it, and I think it's a great way that the tournament's seen and that the expectations of painting are going as well. I think it's super, super important.
Yeah, so something that occurred to me I thought would be interesting is with you know, you guys are a studio, do you do a lot of like, or at any like classes or tutorials, or kind of have like Patreon only material that's like, you know, helps people obviously not get to the level you guys can do, but take someone who's, I can kind of paint to, oh, I feel comfortable painting to above tabletop standard. Because that, to me, it feels like there's so much more of that out there than there was, God, 5 years ago. And now,
yeah,
20 years ago, that like this helps people kind of elevate their game to a certain extent.
No, 100%. Yeah, no. We've been running physical classes here in the UK for about 4 to 5 years. So we've run classes for quite a while. We've got two different types. One's a weekend class. That's a technique course, which is designed to just teach you a toolkit of skills and techniques to upskill you quite dramatically, quite quickly. And then we have another one, which is just a one day kind of blending and weathering class. That's another class that we do. But yeah, we do have a Patreon. So we do have an online tutorial, because we, you know, running the classes exclusively in the UK, we haven't really done them anywhere else, across the globe, unfortunately, yet. But the thing is we do get asked, you know, do you do classes, or do you do this, or do you do this? And we'd love to travel and all that, but I just don't get the time to be able to do that. So two of the guys from the team, you know, run the Patreon account that we have. You know, we've had it for just under a year now, and you know, we've got quite a decent sort of amount of patrons on there, and you know, it suffices obviously for providing that online tutorial format that a lot of people do want from us.
Right.
Yeah, so we do have a Patreon, and we do obviously have physical classes, but yeah, you're quite right. There's more and more tuition that's happening in the industry. Again, that's all part of, you know, combination of more people wanting to increase their painting and become better painters. But at the same time, I think it's also just because passing back skills, even though it's still in a monetized format, and it's obviously people either paying for a class, which is still a service, you know, or obviously, you know, Patreon, it is our way of giving back to the community and passing back the skills. At the end of the day, experience and painting ability is purely time invested. That's all it is. That's all experience is. It's just the time that someone has spent learning to do what they do. That's what it is. So yeah, passing it back is also very important. But yeah, you're quite right. There's loads of people teaching now, and loads of different classes, and loads of different mediums. There's Twitch, there's YouTube, there's obviously physical classes, there's, you know, loads of Patreon accounts and stuff like that. So it's really good that the industry has gotten that for people to have those resources to improve their painting, to be able to do things like tournaments, or to enter competitions, or to do whatever, you know, or just to generally put more presentable models on the table for their demographic with their mates.
Right.
Yeah, I think it's really, really, really good that's happened.
No, that's, yeah, it's just as interesting how, you know, the kind of, it seems like, I mean, hobby players, or just hobbies in general, we discovered the internet a while ago, but it seems like monetizing, or at least bringing out certain skill sets with the hobby particularly, have exploded in the past few years thanks to how easy YouTube makes it and Twitch makes it to actually show people. Because I know I've learned a lot watching things from different, you know, from different painters. Sometimes it's just watching a painter who's not really teaching, they're just painting, but being able to watch how they use their brush, right, like how they're mixing colors, the ratio of their, you know, how they thin their paints to do something specific helps me learn, like, oh, I can try doing that. That works really well.
Yeah, no, it's a very good way of doing it. And I think people, obviously people learn in different manners and learn in different ways. But, you know, visual learning is probably one of the best forms, because you can try and emulate. Does that make sense? Right. So I think it is one of the best ways, you know. I'm a firm believer in that you can't really learn properly or fully, or you can't really learn as quick as you would do if you were sitting with someone. I think because you can stop and ask whatever questions you want, or you can, you know, ask something to be done again or whatever. Whereas when it's in a very linear and physical way, like a video you can't really go, well, can you do that again for me? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, you have to stop and rewind and be like, wait, what did they do? Wait, I still don't see it.
Yeah, exactly. So that's it. I think you'd always have physical classes, you know, with people actually being sitting there with the person. But at the same time, I think, you know, all the video content that's out there, including our Patreon, other people's patrons, and YouTube, Twitch streamers, all those people, I think they all add a lot of value to people, and they're a massive, massive benefit and contribution to people really becoming better painters. I think it's hugely, hugely important, like massively.
Yeah, I mean, that's something I always think about, because, I mean, I love painting. I don't get as much time as I used to, because I have a toddler, and trying to paint around a toddler is a...
I can only imagine.
Yeah, but as someone who, like me, who sees myself of, I'm a good painter when I have the time to really invest into a piece, but, you know, I see some things, I'm like, I don't even know how to do that. You know, would you recommend, like, again, doing the in-person class, right, is the best way to kind of level up your skills? Right.
I think so. You know, obviously that's with the caveat of people do learn in different ways. Mm-hmm. And I think that's something that, you know, no matter how you do it, whether you're sitting with someone or whether you are, or whether you're, you know, in a physical class, you first have to obviously appreciate and understand that people do learn in different ways. But mm-hmm. at the same time, like, you know, yeah, I would always say that for me personally, I think, you know, physical class will always allow you to get that extra amount of tuition, an extra amount of questions, and if there is something that's bugging you, or if there is something that you're unfamiliar with, or if there is something that you're not sure on, I think that physical class is what gives you the opportunity to be able to ask those questions and try it again. Going back to what I was saying about, you know, the best way to do it is to keep trying and keep repetition being the mother of success, and the only way you're going to do that is by being with someone saying, oh, can you show me that specific bit again? Or can you show me that specific bit again? Or can you redo this bit? Or how did you do that again? Or, you know, and just simply replaying a video and going backwards, you just hear the same thing again. And sometimes, you know, teachers will explain things in a different way than the first way they explained it. And then that secondary way of teaching it hits home a lot harder than the first. You know, so it's, you know, physical classes, in my opinion, and it's purely my opinion, I think are the best way to learn. And then I'd say the video, as you know, if you're unable to get to a physical class, then it is the next best alternative to it. I think personally.
No, I'm kind of on you with there. I mean, I'm a teacher by trade. So yeah, actually having one-on-one feedback is essential.
Yeah. And that's why I'm such a big advocate of competitions as well, because, When your mindset is, I have to paint the best I physically can because this is for a competition, and I am trying to do the best I can, I think you'll always grow as a painter a lot more and a lot quicker, because your mindset is completely different to, again, going back to what I was saying earlier, which is being outside of your comfort zone and outside of complacency, because you're painting the same ultramarine, space marines times 30 or times 40 for your army. Whereas if you're doing something that's new and different, or that you are like, this has to be the best I physically can, then I think that's when you do grow the most, because you're pushing yourself outside of the normality of your normal painting. So yeah, I'm a huge advocate for it. And then that's before we even talk about getting feedback from judges and getting very, very, you know, and requesting feedback and asking for feedback from people that are humbly better than you. And you can quite humbly say, look, this dude or this girl is better than me. Right. I'm going to ask questions and learn as much as I physically can, because I want to improve. And the only way to improve is by pushing myself and asking people who have done that journey and got better than me. If that makes sense.
No, absolutely. I mean, yeah, if you want to get better at anything, you have to be willing to ask people who you can identify are better at you than at, how do you do this, right? Yeah. What can I do better?
If you're just, I've got this, whenever we teach classes, I've got this kind of like persona that I create when I talk to the students, and I'm like, you know, if you're asking, you know, and apologies to anyone who is named Tim or Timmy that's listening to this, but if you are asking Timmy down the shop, you know, who's not been painting very long, or that painting is, you know, just being frank, is not as good as yours, then you are asking the wrong person. Do you know what I mean? You need to be asking, you need to be able to be humble and just say, look, you know, you're a much better painter than me. I really like your paint style. I see that you can blend, or I see that you can do this, or I see you can paint skin or faces or eyes or non-metallic metal or whatever the case may be. Right. Look, I'd really love some pointers and some tips. I know that I'm not that good, or that mine isn't as good as that, or I'm really struggling with getting my blending smooth, or whatever the case may be. And if you ask it in that manner, there's no negative for that person, because they're going to be humbled that you're asking them, that you obviously, you know, you are saying that you're better than me. Right. But at the same time, I think that's one of the real cornerstones of the painting in the community, is that passing on the skills and experience in that friend circle or people that you know is a really good way to do it. You know, obviously there's businesses and there's tuition and classes and stuff like that obviously charge money because they are businesses, or they're obviously earning money from teaching. But at the same time, having that ability to ask someone that is factually better than you in your circle, you know, how to improve and how to get better is a resource that if you don't ask, you're really, you know, again, going back to that analogy of running a race with your shoelaces tied together, it's exactly the same sort of thing. Do you know what I mean? So, right. So yeah, it's really important that you do humbly ask people to get better for yourself. So yeah.
Oh, brilliant. So I'm kind of run out of my usual questions other than the, you know, more fun ones of like, brush versus airbrush, you know.
That's a really interesting one. I think first of all, they're both tools. One is not better than the other. Let's just get that out there for a start. An airbrush is a tool for a certain job, and paintbrushes are a tool for another job. You know, like for example, the best way to explain that in a very black and white, you know, freight train bluntness kind of explanation is, you wouldn't try and paint eyes with an airbrush, you know. I think anyone who has used an airbrush or that has, you know, is fairly proficient with an airbrush would understand that you wouldn't paint a tank with a paintbrush, you know, ever right. again, you know. So that's the first thing. But no, I'd say that, you know, 80 to 85% of the process is with a brush, and probably 10 to 15% is with an airbrush. That's the way that I would look at it. I think they're both tools for different jobs. You wouldn't use necessarily one for the other, but they complement and benefit each other respectively.
Right.
That's the way that I'd approach it.
That's a good answer. I like it. And so my last question is, what do you want to plug? Where are you guys going to be doing that's exciting in the next month or two? Where are you going to be going? This is your chance to just, you know, free advertising.
No, cool. Firstly, I would just want to say a massive thank you for having me on. Like, you know, I really, really appreciate it. I know there's some connection issues and apologies for that. Huge thank you. Thank you for everyone who's listening. Thank you very much for having me. So Siege as a business, we're going to be at Adepticon, so we're going to have a stand at Adepticon this year. We had one last year. We met loads of really cool people, and it was lovely to engage with a load of people from the States that we've never really spoken to previously as well, which is really nice. So we've got another booth at Adepticon, so please do come down if you are going and say hello. We've got loads of things on display, which, you know, you can all have a good look at, hopefully. In a couple of weeks, Siege's first, we've got a branded painting competition, which is called Iron Skull. If you just go to www.ironskull.co.uk, you'll see all the information about the competition. That's in a couple of weeks. So you can definitely check out that if you're interested. All the usual social media, we're on everything social. So Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, YouTube. If you want to, we've got loads of videos on our YouTube channel if you'd like to look at cool projects. They're all shown from every angle. You can see all the details on the models, that, you know, there's nothing sort of hidden. You can see absolutely everything that you need to see on the models. If you are anyone who's listening and they haven't got time to paint, or they would like something painted, then I would recommend that you just go to www.siegestudios.co.uk. When you're on the website, hit the get a quote button. It will take you directly to our contact form. Complete that, select all the relevant options from the drop down menus, and then in the message section, include a list of models in our model list format. Fire that off to us. We'll get a quote back to you and get the process started. And if you need any kind of, third party review of the website, then again, if you just go search Siege Studios Trust Pilot, you'll find our Trust Pilot, which again is the only one in the industry, in the commission painting industry. And we have a 96% rating on there as well. So you can go and check us out on there and find out all about our classes and also our commissions through other people's experiences of working with us. So that's what I'd say, pretty much. Again, massive thank you for having me on. I really, really appreciate it hugely. It's been really nice having a chat with you.
Oh no, I appreciate you coming on, James. And I'm now even more upset I don't get to go to Adepticon this year since you guys are going to be there, because I could have said hi, so I'll have to make Adam go buy you a beer instead, since I don't get to go.
It'd be really nice to meet you guys as well, because I was saying, unfortunately, January always seems to be my busiest month of the year, and you know, I would love to. I know Lawrence and Steve Box and quite a few guys, you know, came over obviously to play at the LBO, and I've always wanted to go to Vegas, so it's just a shame I've never been able to.
Maybe 2020, maybe, or 2021 will be your year. Maybe now you can finally block it out.
I very much hope so. Maybe obviously not this year, but next year if you are at Adepticon, it'd be really nice to meet you, and and if you do ever want anyone else to have a chat to about painting, or want to get me on again, then I'd love to come back on and have a chat with you guys.
Absolutely, especially after with your new painting competition. Maybe after the dust settles with that, we can come back on, talk about how it went, trying to start your own kind of event so focused on painting. You know,
fantastic. It's really interesting. We've actually got quite a few people from the States coming over for it, which is incredible. I'm so humbled that so many people are traveling for it. And it's very, very humbling. But I'd love to come back on. Anytime you want me, just let me know, and I'll gladly come on, dude. It'll be great.
Oh yeah, we'll be in touch. And, for everyone else, again, this is James from Siege Studios, out of the UK. Again, just do yourself a huge favor, guys. Whatever social media you like, go look at the photos, drool, because there's just some outstanding models here. I mean, absolutely stunning. And, remember, your time is valuable, and if you want the best looking army possible, but you don't want to spend 200 hours doing it, you should definitely check out Siege, because this work is just, like I said, once you see it, it's hard not to start thinking about, like, you know what, I could get that painted, because I'm already doing that right now. I'm like, no, the Triumph and St. Catherine, I really want that model, but I know I'm not going to paint it well.
It's such a good model, honestly. It's such a good model. Really, really good model. But no, thank you so much. I really appreciate it, dude.
No problem. We'll talk again. And so thanks, everyone, for this listening to this bonus episode. And again, go check out Siege Studios. You will not be disappointed.